How's it going? Welcome back to the show. If you're just joining us, welcome to it. 8:18 here on a Wednesday morning, looking straight ahead to the long Canada Day weekend. And there you go. There's Daniel Alfredson. Joined the boys on In the Box yesterday. If you missed the interview, lots of good stuff from Alfie. You can find it on our website at tsn1200.ca. Jason Spetz also jumped on yesterday. Talk about his old pizza line mate as well. You can find the Spez Dispensers interview as well on our website. So we've got that and a whole bunch more. We're looking ahead to the draft now. Well, we got the buyout window opens on Friday, and then the draft is next Thursday, so we're 8 days away from that. And 2 weeks from today, the doors will open to NHL free agency at high noon. So the next 2 weeks is going to be very fascinating. So let's keep the hockey talk going, and welcome to the show as we do three times every week. At this time, we welcome TSN Hockey Insider Dave Poulin. As always, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
Very well, gentlemen. I had the pleasure of being a part of that show on Monday afternoon. And although we don't get any lead information, you sort of felt the energy building, you know, as we're going to air. And just to see it happen and to see Daniel Alfredson go into the Hall of Fame is pretty cool. And we've talked about it a lot. And to see almost the relief, he was the only one that went in that wasn't the first-time ballot of the players. And a little misleading to say he's a fifth time because of the pandemic and all that's gone on the last couple of years, but just the sense of waiting for that phone call. And, you know, when Mike Gartner and Lanny McDonald make the calls to the respective things. And I'd asked a question on air about the Sedins because having identical twin daughters, when I have important news to share, like, who do you call first? Right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And then when you call one, you're afraid that she's going to speed dial the other one before you get to the other one. So, and you know, they're in two different cities. So as they've grown in age, it's almost become comical when something important happens. And all I can think about was, do you call Daniel first or Henrik first? Like, what does the order go in? And, but a strong class and a classy class. And, you know, guys, when I do something like that, I look at the true definition of being a Hall of Famer. And there's really only, I mean, the way it's worded is ability, sportsmanship, character, and contributions to his or her team or teams and to the game of hockey in general. And so, yes, of course, ability and on-ice performance is a huge part of it, but so is all the other, you know, parts of it that they name and the characteristics that go into truly representing the game. And I think Daniel Alfredson does that in every way.
Dave, you had a long and very distinguished NHL career. Winning the Stanley Cup for any player as they enter the National Hockey League is the ultimate goal. That is the number one goal. I think if you took a survey, you get 100% agreement or close to that. Making a very good living would be at the top of the list. Just in terms of, and maybe take you back to your time as well, did you ever give any thought as you started your NHL career to, beyond winning the Cup, what do I want to accomplish? Did making the Hall of Fame ever cross your mind as you were starting your career?
It didn't, because I didn't even fathom it as realistic. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, I was an undrafted free agent, so when I started. But I did think of it because my training partner my first couple of years and someone who, you know, was a great confidant and a great mentor for me was Bobby Clark. So you knew he was going in at the first available moment. And we talked about it, but in terms of me personally, I honestly can say I never ever remotely thought about myself as a Hall of Fame candidate. I was thrilled to be and respectful of playing in the NHL, but never even dreamt of something like that.
Yeah, the reason I ask is, I mean, you as an undrafted free agent, Daniel Alfredson was a sixth round pick, and a European player as well. Not that they don't pay attention to the NHL when you grow up playing hockey over in Europe, but you know what I mean? You're moving over to another continent to play in the best hockey league in the world. And yet here he is, you know, as of 2 days ago, now becoming a member of the Hall of Fame.
And I think representative of the Ottawa Senators as well, in terms of the face of the franchise. And, you know, I think it's growing over there. When you talk to those guys, and I played in Sweden for a year in the early 80s, and their focus was always on world championships and Olympics. I mean, that was the big deal for them. And then almost as the Stanley Cup grew in importance, as important Swedes won it, and you watched you know, and then they started taking it back, and you watch that happen. People like Nicholas Lidstrom and Zetterberg and guys that wheeled that Stanley Cup back, you know, with their days with the Cup. And I think that changed sort of the drive and desire. And as it became more prominent in the league and more prominent players, and what better statement than three out of the four, you know, players that went in were Swedish.
Well, you think about Forsberg holding off his career to play in the Olympics, Bully. That dynamic changed as well. Tua Daniel Alfredsson, number retired, and people talk about often, hey, he didn't win a Stanley Cup. Does it soften the blow for the guys that didn't win the Cup that, hey, now you are, no matter what the conversation is, a part of a very elite club?
I think it would. I really do. And you know, that whole group that's kind of poised and waiting, and there's a handful of 500 goal scorers that aren't in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, Keith Tkachuk and Edison Beek is in that group. Pierre Turgeon's in that group. Roenick's in that group. Peter Bonder's in that group. You know, so 500 goal scorers are usually shoo-ins for the Hall. So there's a talented group, and that's where Daniel Alfredsson's challenge came, is because, you know, Alexander Mogilny, another talented, you know, player who he would have had a cup in Jersey, but a number of those guys didn't win cups. And, you know, and that was sort of, not the stigma, but the final thing that pushed you over. But this puts them at a whole different level. I mean, a lot more people won Stanley Cups that are in the Hall of Fame, and quite a special honor for Daniel Alfredsson.
Next year, and then we'll move on from the Hall of Fame talk, there aren't necessarily a lot of marquee names that are going to become eligible for the first time, but I'll give you three names, and you tell me whether you think they're first balloters or maybe potentials for down the road or not a chance. And that would be Henrik Lundqvist, Corey Crawford, who won two Stanley Cups, and Mr. Game 7, Justin Williams. Any first balloters there? But may take a while, and no chancer of those three names.
Well, it's funny because I want to go on first reaction. I had no idea the names they were going to come up with. And the first one I think of is Henrik Lundqvist is Hall of Fame. And just my own hockey fan gut reaction. Next in line for me would probably be Justin Williams. But that one's real close to me. And I don't think of Corey Crawford as a Hall of Famer, despite his cups and his numbers and everything else.
Right.
But that's just my first gut reaction is, you know, if I were playing against those guys, if I were managing them, coaching them, game planning them, everything else, Lundqvist stands out above the group, despite Justin Williams' heroics, you know, in 17.
All right, well, we're fully into the offseason for everybody now. The Tampa Bay Lightning went through the list of what their players were playing with throughout the playoffs and then into the Stanley Cup final. It's a long list of really significant injuries. I don't know if have you seen the list from Braden Point's torn quad to Anthony Cirelli's dislocated shoulder. Point thinks that he'll be recovered in a few weeks, but for a player like Anthony Cirelli, and again, just the wear and tear on the organization as a whole, the players, is there a pretty decent chance that, you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning to start next year could be a team that A, will be missing some players, and B, might be just a team that could start a tad slow given everything they've gone through?
I could see that argument, but at the same time, you know, this is going to be the longest summer that they've had. And, you know, this will feel like a luxury to them maybe to have, you know, two full months off. Two plus full months off, and they'll probably get 10 weeks. So, you know, injuries that linger into next year are a concern, but I think that's still a good hockey team. And going through the ages, I think that's a team that's going to have to be reckoned with for a couple more years at least. And, you know, they will lose some players. There will be some changes, there has been in their two cup years. But I don't see them as a slow starter. I think this is, you know, coming off of the last couple of summers, this is going to seem like a luxury to them in the length of time they have off. And I had years like this where, you know, I think I mentioned at one point we had played the latest. It was May 31st. And I was really banged up that year. And I had to go to the Canada Cup camp, or got to go to the Canada Cup camp, but that started in the 1st of August. And in that length of time, since there wasn't enough time for me to recover personally, then that had some lingering effects. But I think on a relative basis with what these guys have been through, I think this is going to feel like a long, long time off for them. And I'm sure they'll be respectful of it in the way they start and the way they manage their workloads early in the year.
As a management group, Pooley, the fact you lost the cup, and I know you won back-to-back, but I look at a summer where they might have to make some bold and hard decisions. Does it make it just a tad easier to sit back and remove some of the emotion?
It arguably does, and yet you're making them to move forward. You're not making them because you lost the cup.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and that's the difference. You know, there's no blame factor here. It's just that, you know, we've got to take steps forward, but there's still a lot of guys in that team whose age starts with a 2, and in some key places. I mean, you think about a kid like Sergachev, he's only 24 years old, and Chernak's only 25. So you've got some youth there in that group that's still a factor, and the most important age is Vasilevskiy, who's only 27.
We're a week away from the draft, or 8 days. We are exactly 2 weeks away from the opening day of free agency. An interesting note out of Pittsburgh yesterday, a report out of Pittsburgh that suggests that the Penguins at this point aren't anywhere close on a deal for pending free agent Evgeny Malkin, who is turning 36, and that Chris Letang and the team are at this point, pretty far apart in terms of term and money on a new contract as well, and he just turned 35. If you were running the Penguins, is it a better idea? I mean, they're all in as long as Sidney Crosby is there, right? They're trying to win cups. Is it a better idea to, even if you have to go longer on term and money, to bring back those guys? Or are you better to spend your money, and I don't know who the players are, but spend your money on other players in an attempt to try to get back to a Stanley Cup again with Sidney Crosby?
I think you'll see change there, but I don't think... If you're putting me in charge, I'm bringing back Letang over Malkin positionally, and I'm taking the chance and looking for a second line center in the market, and that's just my gut in terms of age and everything of Malkin. You know, at 35, it's the same age. I believe it's the exact same age as Letang, but positionally, Letang had a tremendous year. He's a defenseman. And that factors in for me. Those are huge shoes to fill in Letang. I'm not, saying that, but there are guys in the market. I mean, with money available, there are guys in the market. And I think, boy, oh boy, guys, there's going to be a master's class in math right now in every NHL head office, because you're looking at every single thing that could happen. And you've got to look at your own team. You've got to look at your RFAs. You're looking at your UFAs. But you're looking at the market and who else might be available and whether they fit in your club or not. And the money's still on a crunch. So you're still looking at, like, okay, guys, we still have a really tight budget, but what can we do? And Pittsburgh's a team that, because of the guys that are gone, and they've got their own internal cap, it's called Sidney Crosby. And arguably it's called Jake Gensel, who only makes $6 million. So,
right.
You know, they're going to have to be sensitive to that going out into the marketplace as well. But I think they're going to be a player this summer because of number 87.
Are the Corey Perrys of the world the players that are at the end of their career who've made their money? Now, he's won a cup. He's a little bit different. But players of that ilk who aren't necessarily signing contracts with teams for money, but because they want to win, are they still looking at the Pittsburgh Penguins as a team that they would think about joining with a chance to win the cup?
Yeah, I think they'd almost be in the next tier down, you know, behind the Tampas and the Colorados, but a team that can still compete because of what we talked about. And that would be a selling point for me. Like, they've got some decisions to make on guys like Ricard, Raquel, who they brought in, Evan Rodriguez, who had a really good year for them. But assuming that team comes back and it's healthy, and they bring Letang back, and they get a second-line center, and they do some other things as well, which I believe they will, I still think that's a highly competitive team. And, you know, I mean, you're talking about players like Mark Giordano, who now has chosen the Leafs and, you know, signed a very favorable contract and does it like that, or as Jason Spezza did for the last couple of years. And so that'll be out there. But I think in terms of, you know, when you look at Pittsburgh, they were that close this year to getting it done, and they were all, you know, at the end, they were playing their third-string goalie and still came close to upsetting the New York Rangers. So I do think they're just in that tier below the you know, what I would have as the elite teams.
We've heard Petrie's name is kind of a backfill for Letang, which is almost a salary dump. But is this a real careful dance if you're Pittsburgh? And then all of a sudden everyone flies off the shift and you thought Kadri might be your guy and he signs in Anaheim with Dallas Eakins or anywhere else. And all of a sudden Malkin decides to go somewhere that you're left holding the bag.
Yeah, I think they'll be aggressive, Simmer. You know, I think that'll be the game now. Is, you know, some teams will want to wait and some will want to be aggressive and get out and do it. But, you know, Petrie's an interesting one, and I've obviously watched him a lot in the last couple of years. And last year was such an off year. And, you know, you go back the year before, halfway through the year, he was the leading defense scorer in the league and he had a terrific year. And so that's the player I'm trying to see is if he's still there. And, you know, and there were so many different factors with his family staying down below and south of the border and, you know, not being there. And so I still think there's a lot of game left in Jeff Petrie. And that could be a move that Montreal would be involved in. But the whole waiting game is the timing. Like, it's just like as it is with trade deadlines. I like to get out and get ahead of it. And, you know, if I have a player that I want to be ahead of it, and I don't want to wait until 3 o'clock on trade deadline day when the price is going up. And yet, arguably, one of the best trade deadline pickups was Arturi Lehkonen, and that was at like 2:55 on trade deadline day.
Timing, you mean tampering. And in the case of Petrie, do you look at his situation, though, and I understand what you're saying. First of all, age, and again, he still gets around. Very smart player, Pooley. But would you not also be nervous about whether or not you have a suitable partner for him?
Yeah, I would, but I can picture who that partner is, and it's, the partner type of player would be a Joel Edmondson type of player, because if you go back to the playoffs and that run that they had and his success, it was with Edmondson as a partner. So that type of, you know, left Mark Messier type of player almost, that everybody wants to play with their more offensive players. But Petrie still does skate well. He still moves, you know, well, and I think the mileage is in a decent range in terms of physical. You know, 34 years old for a veteran defenseman isn't too old, and he's got a couple years left. I think 3 years left on his deal. So that would be someone that I would have interest in.
Who's going to be in net for the Leafs on opening night next season?
Oh, boy, I'm not that smart, JR. I am not that smart. I still think it's the best chance is Jack Campbell. And I'm not sure, because numbers-wise, I'm not sure which team out there pays big term and big dollars for Jack Campbell. You know, because is he a guy that for sure is going to, you know, be an upgrade in terms of winning a Stanley Cup?
It's supply and demand, though. I mean, I'm going to give you a list of five teams here that either fancy themselves as Stanley Cup contenders or want to make a big jump. So I got Edmonton, I got Toronto, I got Washington, I got Colorado, because Darcy Kemper's a UFA, and I've got New Jersey. Those five teams right now, to me, need a number one goalie for next season. So the old law of supply and demand would tell you he's probably going to end up with either more term or more dollars than maybe we think.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. I'm not sure I have Jersey in that class. If I were Jack Campbell and I had a chance to go to Colorado, I'd probably take less term and less money to do it.
Right.
You know, and did they win a cup this year without, I mean, numbers-wise, you know, in the analytics world, just crushed Kemper. I think he was 29th or 30th of the goalies that played in the playoffs in terms of expected goals and that, but he was good enough to win. And he was good enough to stare down the guy at the other end in a 2-1, you know, final game and get the job done. But
I only included New Jersey because they got tons of cap space, so they can make the dollars work more than anybody else.
Yeah, I'm not sure they have the team, though. And, you know, Washington might think they're set in net more so than the other teams. Edmonton is interesting, but do they look at Jack Campbell and say that's a slam dunk? You know, that's the guy we have to have. Or do they look at a Darcy Kemper if he's available and say, now he's got to stay on the cup pedigree, and whatever ailments he had before in his game may have been cured with winning a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, even on that Pooley further, because I think Kemper will re-sign in Colorado, I do look at Edmonton and New Jersey as the absolute obvious. When you go out and sign a Dougie Hamilton and you're trying to fast-track and you have all these young kids, what other realistic option is there other than Jack Campbell as a free player for two, I think, desperate franchises. I mean, New Jersey got to win some hockey games at some point here.
Yeah, they do. There's no question. And you think it's going to be this year. I'm not 100% sure that Jack Campbell's that guy. Yeah. And, you know, we've watched him, and we've watched him play well in spurts, and we've watched him struggle at key times. And overall, the numbers are good. I'm not sure that I'm committing long-term dollars and term to that player.
Yeah. Any possibility, and we may have addressed it before, but could you ever see the Ottawa Senators and the Toronto Maple Leafs doing something on Matt Murray?
I'm not sure. I mean, on a healthy Matt Murray, I'm not sure, because the dollars would really have to be absorbed by Ottawa, and I'm not sure they're willing to do that for a division rival, and that would have to be a significant play. And, you know, Matt Murray is going to be a burning question, and it's something that we're going to talk about a lot over the next, you know, few weeks, and see how things break down in net. Because there are still those out there who believe in him. They just, you know, whether they can absorb that number or not.
A question for you, Pooley. On a 6.25 cap hit with $7 and $8 million left, any idea how that, do you have to pick up half of the 15 to bring it down to around three million?
It's the cap hit.
Okay.
Not the dollars.
So if I pick, if I picked up $3 million a year, that would bring it down to 3.25?
Yeah, you can do 50%, right? Yeah. It's the cap hit you're talking about on absorbing it, not the actual dollars.
Dave, I agree with your point on the divisional rival thing, but much to the chagrin of Sens fans, the Sens have leaped in to rescue the Leafs from both Dion Phaneuf and Nikita Zaitsev in the past 6 or 7 years. So
at a different time, though. At a different time.
Absolutely. All right, on that note, we'll let you go. Appreciate it. Went a little OT there. Appreciate the time, as always, and we'll chat again on Friday. Or no, we won't. Actually, we won't be here Friday.
No, we'll chat again on
Monday. Guys. Yes.
Have a tremendous holiday weekend.
Yes, thanks, Dave. Take care.
Okay, take care.
K49 on this Wednesday morning with J.R. Simmer and Hammer. Memorial Cup championship game will go tonight. It's the final hockey game of the year, kids. St. John Sea Dogs taking on the Hamilton Bulldogs. Bulldogs versus Sea Dogs tonight, 6 o'clock. You can watch the game on TSN television. Of course, all eyes on Carp native Mason McTavish, who's had a really good tournament. That guy, Simmer, looks like he's going to step into the National Hockey League next year for Anaheim. He's a kind of a man-child in the Ontario Hockey League. He looks like he's going to step in and just be money.
Yeah.
I think that was a really good pick.
Yeah, we had the discussion about drafting. I mean, the sway of he and Zegras, and I'm blanking on the defenseman from the Sanderson draft from the Ontario Hockey League that's playing in Anaheim as well.
Drysdale.
Yeah. You know, I mean,
Don't forget about my friend Olin Zellweger.
Yeah, no, but, you know, that is JR. I mean, and that's where I get in. Like, comparisons, if you're going through drafts and, you know, once in a while a guy be a miss or whatever, but take those three picks and then just do a cross-section of other teams picking in the top 10 and how franchise-altering that has been for what they have picked, which are just three absolute studs.
Pierre LeBrun reporting in the last 15 minutes, and this is tough news, that looks like Anthony Duclair of the Florida Panthers has suffered an Achilles tendon injury while training. This is not an injury left over from the playoffs of the regular season. This happened while training. And so writes Pierre LeBrun, looking at potential surgery. And anytime we hear of either a rupture or a tear of an Achilles injury, that is something where the recovery time is significant. Anywhere from, probably 4 to 5 to 6 months, mm-hmm, to maybe upwards of a year, depending on how it. Now, Achilles surgery has come a long way from where it used to be. But that is not good. Anthony Duclair had a really good year, 31 goals. This past year. Now, there was still the odd time when he was a healthy scratch, including in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So, but by and large, this was his coming out party down in Florida this year. So that's a tough injury for Anthony Duclair.
Yeah, no, I think since he's gone to Florida, JR has been very good, and you hate to see that happen. Now, I would wonder, based on the sport, and the obvious would be Kobe Bryant, and then the obvious would be Kevin Durant, depending on the size, the quickest recovery, and I believe he had surgery, was Pajot being hurt in training camp, right, mm-hmm, here in Ottawa?
Yeah, he missed half the year, right?
Yeah, so, but, you know, and then again.
But that's rupture versus tear.
Yeah, yeah, right? for sure. You know, that is just for an athlete. I mean, last thing you want to hear in football, any sport for that matter, right? And you do think for, you know, back in the day, that was almost considered to be career ending.
Mm-hmm. On to the question I asked of Dave Poole, and I'll put it to you as the goaltending apologist here on the show. I'm looking at the list of unrestricted free agent goalies that are going to be available as of 2 weeks from today, trying to suss out who's going to land where.
Yeah.
Because I do think that the New Jersey Devils are going to be in the market for a goal. It was a disaster last year. And as you mentioned, with the $9 million they're giving Dougie Hamilton, or have given Dougie Hamilton, this is not going to be the slow, steady build. They want to get going here. They got some really nice young players, but they need a goalie. And whether it's trading for somebody or whether it's signing somebody, they've got the financial wherewithal in terms of cap space that they're going to be able to dictate the market to a certain extent. So as much as, and I agree with Dave Poulin, I mean, they're not of Edmonton and Toronto and Washington and Colorado. New Jersey's not of that ilk right now, but that doesn't mean that they're not, but they have more cap space than any of those four teams as well to try to solve that problem.
Well, and I'll be honest, Jack Campbell, I don't know what he's looking at. Did he love playing in Toronto where it looked like he was going to have a mental make break? And I don't mean that in a bad way, Jer, just the stress of playing there. And he worked very hard. He's a great guy. If you all of a sudden roll in and New Jersey's offering you 6 years and $5.5 million, I would think absolutely you'd look at a situation like that, even more so versus Edmonton. And to your point on supply and demand, the only part that would affect that in the goalie market, because I do think Kemper stays, when you hear a Gibson name, that's a possibility. But now we're talking about, you know, well, okay, Anaheim calls, we want Gibson. Well, obviously I want the second pick overall, right? Now, what else do I want from you? Are you willing to do that? And then for each organization, JR, unless we were really up to speed on who's truly ready to emerge, right? Like who out there thinks, hey, I got the guy coming on the entry-level contract that's good enough. But for the most part, yeah, I think, and again, I'll say this for all free agents, you know, if Malkin's different, but in the case of Kadri, to Jack Campbell, to Johnny Hockey, they're going to fly off the shelves.
Absolutely.
It is imperative you get tampering right away to find out where you're at, because
gentlemen, start your tampering.
Well, no, but and so sincerely, JR, I mean, Pittsburgh can talk a tough line all they want. If they lose Malkin and Letang, and I'm not as bullish on Petrie as Dave is, in a sense of he's still got some good things, but actually I think you need a real mobile partner for him at this point. So how you're going to do this, there's just not many players, and you can say it's a stagnant cap, but go through Cap Friendly. There is millions and millions of dollars sitting there. And in the case of New Jersey's also got to be at a point where there's stress on the business, JR. Hey, you just, as your Fitzgerald, you just have to win at some point, right? I mean, you know, and you can argue the fact, I'll say this, the fact that Jack Campbell handled that market the way he did, JR, I'd actually be very confident he'd be good in New Jersey. That to me,
right,
showed me an awful lot what he did in Toronto.
Way more under the radar and under the microscope than he would be in Toronto.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I'm looking at the unrestricted free agent goalie market, and, I mean, there's 20-odd names on here, but there are really only three if you see either you're a Stanley Cup contender or if you're a team like New Jersey, you're a team that wants to take a giant step forward this year. And I don't even know if you would put these three as elite in any way. But you got 37-year-old Marc-Andre Fleury. You've got 32-year-old Darcy Kemper, who just won the Stanley Cup. Absolutely. As you said, you think he's going to re-sign in Colorado. And then the only other one is Jack Campbell. Yeah. Other than that, I mean, I'm just going through it, and this is based on this list is by what they made last year. Here's the rest of the list. Tomas Greiss, Martin Jones, Braden Holtby, Yaroslav Halak, David Riddick, Casey DeSmith, Phoenix Copley, Malcolm Sue. Like, there's nothing there.
No.
There's nothing there.
There's capable veteran backups if you had a young goalie.
So we got five teams right now and three goalies. Now, that doesn't preclude a trade, as you said, for a guy like Gibson. That's a game changer.
Oh, for sure.
But teams aren't giving up their number one goalie, by and large, outside of maybe Anaheim. So that's what makes your question about Matt Murray kind of fascinating. And whether it's Toronto or whether there's another team. Again, you're looking at Ottawa in all likelihood having to retain some money or do something. It isn't just going to be a, hey, we want Matt Murray, we'll give you whatever it takes. So this is not going to be kind of a typical hockey trade, as it were. But that's what makes this whole Matt Murray angle, I think, pretty interesting if the Senators are shopping him. And I have to think that they are, given the way that Anton Forsberg played last year and the fact they've got three guys on one-way contracts. Of whether the law of supply and demand maybe does make Matt Murray a little more desirable than we think.
I know you go to the grocery store all the time, JR, and you see the kids sitting in the shopping cart, right? You know, when they're driving
out
with their parents.
Yes, of course.
Like, Matt Murray is actually in a cart. Like, like he's so ready to be shipped. It went from a 10% off to 25%. We'll go down to 50. Then you get into all these other discussions. Okay. where's your budget at? The Ottawa Senators have to pay out a fair amount of money, $7 million Canadian by my estimation this summer, JR, to Hamonic, to Zaitsev, to Bobby Ryan, to Dion Phaneuf. They owe Pierre Maguire's salary. So now let's get into the decision on Matt Murray. Well, it would make you sick to your stomach if you picked up half the cap hit. Mm-hmm. He goes to Toronto and his lights out. But at the same time, it's $15 million on my books. Okay, so would it be better to buy him out at $10 million?
But he could land in Toronto than anywhere.
Well, exactly.
I don't think
exactly.
You ever look at it as, I don't want to trade him to our rivals because he might be good there and he might lead in the new. I think you have to make the best trade for you. And if a trade is with the Leafs, then you got it. In my opinion, I'm making the best trade. Period.
I don't know. It's interesting.
Hey, if Matt Murray goes, if you were to trade him to Toronto, you might be thinking of the Ottawa Senators right now. I just torpedoed whatever chance they're putting all their money into Matt Murray. Yeah, he could sink that ship.
Well,
you sunk my battleship.
No, and to the point, JR, I say on this one, absolutely, I agree with you. I don't have any faith that Matt Murray's going to stay healthy. So that alone, if I could dump that to Toronto, I'd end up doing it at the end of the day. And I also not big on, interdivisional. You know, I go back to Ben Bishop or other things. There's different pressure points. But, yeah, if you feel like that now, the other side is a super motivated Matt Murray, which, hey, that's been a big issue here. I mean, he has not put the work in. It's been called out many times. They waived him in the middle of a road trip. So, yeah, if you think, man, look at what we're going to do. But I'll go back to the health part. Like, I couldn't, I couldn't even guarantee you're going to get through the first practice of training camp. Like, that's how fragile he is.
That's the reality.
No, for sure.
But you can't trust him.
No, if you,
injury-wise.
And if you feel that way and you're Ottawa, and it's not a matter of payback, but if you felt like, man, first of all, they're going to take him off our hands. And did I understand with Pooley, am I saying this right, JR, that he's going to make $7 and $8 million? If I pick up $3 million each year, that takes the cap out in half. Is it accurate?
Yes, it's based on the cap.
Okay. Yeah. So if you brought him down to 3.25, and you could go to your owner and say, "Hey, I just saved $9 million." And a guy, I think his situation is another level too, JR. Where first of all, you got Gustafson and Forsberg, which I'm comfortable with. I think the removal of Matt Murray from your group, and again, this is something that I don't think right away, but as the dust settles and they start to look around, then you get into, well, you got to take Mrazek back. Well, who knows how this is going to go, but there are just not enough goaltenders right now
to
satisfy the market.
I'm not retaining money on Matt Murray and taking Peter Mrazek
back.
That may be the trade where I take Mrazek and I'm giving you Murray, so I'm saving some money. But again, I don't know how that works for Toronto because they're already cap strapped and they'd be adding another $2.5 million to their cap. So I don't think that works for Toronto.
Well, the combination of Mrazek and 3.25 would be in essence the salary cap hit of Matt Murray anyway, JR, if you did the switch out. Do you know what I mean? Matt Murray's at 6.25. Is Mrazek not like 3.8?
3.8.
Yeah. So in essence, it's kind of the same thing. Do you want Mrazek back or do you want to pick up money? If you're Ottawa, would you be comfortable with Mrazek?
Then I'm still stuck with three goalies on one-way contracts
Ottawa. No, for sure. I as I said, and geez, Mrazek has been just a tad banged up the last few years, too.
Oh, yeah. So I think this whole question with the Leafs and the goaltending, and people go crazy when we talk about the Leafs all the time, but this thing with the goalies and them, like what's going to happen? And Dubas, I'll give him credit for this. You thought it was they had closed all the loops when Lou was there. Kyle Dubas and Shanahan and Shanny have shut it right down. Like you're not hearing. Since old Mitch Marner signed, it's been closed right off.
Yeah.
So they have done, you consider it to be a good job, and we all love rumors, don't get me wrong. You're not hearing nothing. Like, there is going to be something that drops with the Maple Leafs, with a goalie, whether it's a trade before free agency, or it's not going to be a shock if it's any of these three guys in free agency, because we'll have talked it through by then. But there's going to be something that drops here in the next 2 weeks, which is going to be fascinating.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. A bit of a wild card, JR, just I don't have it in front of me, but Huso would be an interesting one in St. Louis.
Yep.
To who would look at that.
A lot of talk
that
Blues want to keep him.
Yeah. And then now, if they do that, then they want to ship out Binnington. So for the Leafs, what's interesting, and I know you can argue that Darcy Kuemper got brought over to Colorado to kind of hopefully put the finishing touches on, but this also kind of speaks going back to the summer of Kadri and to some extent Zaitsev and Brown. As a team that has not won anything, and you're now entering a phase of where you don't have a ton of assets here, you're up against the cap, and you don't even know who your goalie is, and you think you're going to win a Stanley Cup, I'm not sure that's a great plan.
Got to spin some magic, baby. This has got to be the summer of Dubas if he's going to do it.
Yeah.
All right, thoughts on anything we chat about are welcome. You can text us at 12-1200, tweet at us at TSN 1200. Again, free agency doors open at noon 2 weeks from today. And, of course, the draft is 1 week from tomorrow. So we're closing in on some significant dates on the NHL calendar. And, oh, yeah, the buyout window is open on Friday. And the Senators potentially could be big players there as well. Potentially, we stress. Matt Murray may be a guy that's on the list. Michael Delzato, Colin White, amongst Nikita Zaitsev. Although that one doesn't make sense on a buyout term, but that opens on Friday as well. So it's going to be a fascinating next 2 to 3 weeks for sure here in Ottawa and around the National Hockey League. All right, just past 9 o'clock. If you'd like a pair of tickets to go see comedian Russell Peters, he's playing a show July 26th at Canadian Tire Center. Call us right now. Be caller number 20. At 613-750-1200 or star 1200. That's a free call on Bell. Caller number 20 wins a pair of tickets to see comedian Russell Peters at Canadian Tire Center on July 26th. We'll take a break. Top of the hour update. Back with our hour four, which will include a visit with a Stanley Cup champion. Sean Allard is the skating coach with the Colorado Avalanche. He's from or lives in Ottawa. He's from Petawawa. He's just won the cup, and he's going to join us live from Denver. And we'll talk about what it's like to be part of a Stanley Cup winning organization with Sean Allard coming up in the next hour right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200.